Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Danny Gill, and thanks for joining us. Troops, do you like coffee? Love coffee? Well, if you do, you'll be very happy to touch base with our newest sponsor, Freedom One Coffee. An active duty soldier and his wife run the company. His Marine vet dad helped design it. Wait till you see the packaging. It's almost as good as the taste, and the taste is awesome. Check Freedom, the number one, coffee.com. That's Freedom, the number one, coffee.com. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Do you like coffee, Skip?
Actually, I don't like coffee, but my wife grew up on the West Coast like you did, so she loves coffee. We're definitely going to have to try this out.
Definitely. Well, here's what we have for you today. A news and comment by the Colonel. I'm going to discuss the invasion of our southern border. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Next, we'll discuss the war China is currently waging with us with retired General Robert Spalding. Then General Arnold Panero will return to discuss some of our nation's other challenges. And we'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to the show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or you can do it on Facebook. Now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel of Frontlines of Freedom. And we'll start with the news. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
Well, a Ukrainian official said that Mariupol City doesn't exist anymore after Russia announced the urban area of the city is clear of Ukraine troops. Quote, "The situation at Mariupol is both dire militarily and heartbreaking. The city doesn't exist anymore. The remainder of the Ukrainian army and large group of civilians are basically encircled by the Russian forces," Ukrainian Foreign Minister Kuleba said. The Kremlin announced that there were no Ukrainian troops in the urban area of Mariupol, a key battlefield in the east of Ukraine. Quote, "The entire urban territory of Mariupol is completely cleared of militants of the Nazist group Azov, foreign mercenaries, and Ukrainian troops," the Russian Defense Ministry wrote. "About 2,500 Ukrainian troops are blocked from leaving Azovstal, one of Europe's biggest metallurgical plants located in the east of Mariupol, by Russian troops who have surrounded the plant," the Russian Defense Ministry estimated. Several Ukrainian officials said their troops are still struggling in Mariupol and have defied the deadline offered by Russian forces to surrender. The Russian Defense Ministry gave the Ukrainians at Mariupol's giant Azovstal steel mill until April 17 to surrender, saying that those who put down their weapons will be guaranteed to keep their lives. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky threatened to cut all talks with Russia if the remaining Ukrainian troops at Mariupol were eliminated.
Well, it's clear that Russian leadership is pure evil, and I'm glad we're continuing to support Ukraine. The Russians have indicated they may be going to destroy all those troops and civilians. You know, it would have been a big, huge help if we'd given them the equipment we abandoned in Afghanistan. Maybe the Taliban will give some of it to them.
The Pentagon lost another top IT official in April with the resignation of Preston Dunlap, the chief architecture officer of the Air and Space Forces. In an open resignation letter posted to social media, Dunlap said that he was proud of the 3 years he spent at the Defense Department, but that bureaucracy, a risk-averse culture, and other internal issues made innovation more difficult than it should have been. He said that the department fostered an environment in which it was hard but not impossible to innovate, and compared the effort required to break through Pentagon bureaucracy to the effort needed to push satellites past Earth's gravity. "I've spent the last 3 years working to defy gravity and yet desperately needed technology into our operators' hands," Dunlap said. "By the time the government manages to produce something, it's too often obsolete. No business would ever survive this way, nor should it." Dunlap's resignation follows that of Pentagon Chief Software Officer Jason Weiss earlier in April and that of Air and Space Forces Chief Software Officer Nicholas Chalane in October. Both Weiss and Chalane had used their resignations to warn that out-of-control bureaucracies were preventing a talented and dedicated workforce in the Defense Department from succeeding.
Hey, those people are not alone. General John Hyden, the former vice chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, also tried to combat the growing military bureaucracy And in the final months before his retirement in November, he sounded the alarm on what he saw as a number of red flags for U.S. readiness. During an October 2021 interview, Hayden derided what he called brutal Pentagon bureaucracy for hamstringing America's military, and that the U.S. military leadership was making the nation less secure through the process of overclassification, essentially blocking out knowledge of their projects from the public eye, because they knew that if a project was classified, there'd be less bureaucratic red tape for them to be entangled in. We need all new leadership in the Pentagon.
26 state governors, all Republican, announced the creation of a border strike force to, quote, disrupt and dismantle transnational criminal organizations, unquote, on April 19. The group of governors signed a memorandum of understanding, pledging to work together to serve as a force multiplier to target cartels and criminal networks financially and operationally. Together, governors will improve public safety, protect victims from horrific crimes, reduce the amount of drugs in our communities, and alleviate the humanitarian crisis at the southern border, the agreement states. The group includes two border states, Arizona and Texas, and 24 others. Quote, in the absence of federal leadership, states are partnering together to create the American Governor's Border Strike Force to disrupt and dismantle transnational criminal organizations by increasing collaboration, improving intelligence, investing in analysis, combating human smuggling, and stopping drug flow in our states, the agreement states. The governors will coordinate to share intelligence, disrupt smuggling corridors, and assist border states. They plan to focus efforts on targeting cartel finances and border-related crime. The states plan to review state laws regarding human trafficking, drug trafficking, and transnational criminal organizations, quote, to ensure that such crimes are prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, unquote.
As I discussed last week, we're being invaded across our southern border, and it seems to me that our federal government is doing all they can to facilitate it. They're certainly doing nothing to stop it. My hat's off to these governors who are working to protect our nation. Find out if your state is one of the good guys. Check with your governor.
As President Biden prepares to remove Title 42 enforcement power from law enforcement agents at the southern border, the illegal immigration crisis facing the nation is growing worse daily. With the traditional peak months for illegal border crossings approaching, the nation is already seeing hundreds of thousands of border encounters with illegals every month. In March, there were over 221,000 apprehensions at the southern border. That's the highest monthly number in 22 years and a 33% increase over February's number of almost 166,000 border arrests. Single adults made up 76% of the March encounters, also a 33% one-month increase. Fentanyl seizures skyrocketed by 55% over the last month as national overdoses, particularly among Black teenagers, continue to rise steadily. The first half of fiscal year 2022 has seen around 1.2 million arrests of illegal immigrants at the southern border. With the numbers surging, it is all but certain that total encounters will far exceed 2 million by the end of the fiscal year in September. Most of the new migrants will end up joining the 2.5 million who have already been allowed to enter the U.S. since Biden assumed office. Many others will join the hundreds of thousands of gotaways who have slipped into America without encountering the nation's overextended law enforcement agencies.
I wonder who's feeding, housing, and caring for these illegal people. This is a huge national crisis for us, safety-wise, economically, and who knows how many new terrorists are here now. And what are their plans? And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do regularly. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. Coming up next on Front Lines of Freedom, we'll share comments by the Colonel, and then we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom, and then we'll discuss the threat of China. Eddie Stroops, take a break. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. There's a new coffee company I want you to know about. Freedom One Coffee is owned by an active duty service member and has incredible coffee options. They offer an amazing bourbon barrel aged coffee not something you can get at your local supermarket. Freedom One Coffee offers 9 different options to choose from. They also donate a portion of their profits to organizations that help veterans. Use the promo code FREEDOM for 15% off your first purchase at freedomonecoffee.com. Let me tell you, when you buy a bag of Freedom One Coffee, you're not just buying a bag of beans. You're buying an experience. All their packaging is military-themed, honoring the sacrifice of veterans. As an added personalized touch, all of your Freedom One Coffee orders include a handwritten thank you card. If you want to support a fellow soldier and grab a great cup of coffee, visit freedomonecoffee.com today and use the promo code FREEDOM for 15% off your first order.
The VA frequently denies veterans disability benefits for PTSD. Barry Law has been helping fellow veterans with PTSD fight for compensation for over 20 years. At Barry Law, we've spent decades building a team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees to provide veterans with maximum firepower when appealing VA decisions. To appeal your decision, visit PTSDlawyers.com.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your home defense tip of the week. Most home invasions occur when people are at work between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. Because of this, we highly recommend the installation of a home security video surveillance system. These systems are easy to install and cost only a few hundred dollars. They allow you to monitor your home while you're at work via your computer or cell phone. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Troops, did you know American farmers are going out of business because folks are buying foreign food? It's not good for our nation's security if we can't feed ourselves. We need to maintain our food independence by buying food grown in America. Patriot Foods is not emergency food. It's food produced by our farmers, and it's good. I eat it. Check patriotfoods.com. That's patriotfoods.com. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Troops, I just can't believe the total nonsense we're hearing about wearing masks. It appears the airlines no longer require them, but the non-thinkers at the high levels of our government haven't given up. And with some students, especially very young ones, in some regions have to wear masks. And medical facilities all over are requiring them. I have a friend who's a medical doctor practicing. He knows that masks are less than worthless, but he could lose his certification to practice medicine if he publicly says so. So, just for the record, here's my position. I'm not a medical expert, but I do have common sense. Please consider this. We're told that wearing a mask will help protect us from getting or giving coronavirus germs. Okay, the mask is a filter, nothing more. We have filters in our coffee pots, car engines, and air circulation systems. Their job is to catch and hold bad things and hang on to them so that the bad thing won't get into the system, in this case, our lungs. They do have to let air pass through. Okay, so you arrive at work or school or wherever, and you put on your mask. You adjust it a couple of times and do your thing. You'll touch your mask on occasion to adjust it or remove it for a drink or lunch or something, and put it back on. When you're done for the day, you take it off, put it on your desk or car seat or purse, and there it sits until you put it back on again, right? Okay, the inside of the mask is catching and holding at least some of the germs you might exhale. The outside is catching and holding at least some of the germs that were in the atmosphere that you were in, protecting you. Those germs are now highly concentrated on your mask, and you touch the mask multiple times and then touch your face or food or children, etc. It doesn't take anything but common sense to see that you just took concentrated germs and spread them all over your body and turf. And tomorrow, you'll do it again. Assuming there are bad germs out there, the only reasonable way to use a mask is only to touch it when wearing surgical gloves and then depositing the gloves and the mask when it's removed into a hazardous waste container. Any other handling of a mask only greatly increases the probability that the germs will spread to you and those around you. I hope this makes sense to you. Two other points I've heard on this topic. If your mask protects you, why do you care if others wear one? And some medically trained friends have told me that the air passages through the mask, while really small, are much bigger than the germs. So, wearing a mask is like putting a chain link fence around your yard to keep the bees out. Oh, and then there's Ukraine. How about this? The Russians are waging war in the air, on land, and on sea. The air war was conceded to Russia a month ago when President Biden, unnerved by a Putin threat, vetoed the transfer of Polish MiGs to Ukraine. At sea, Russian ships bombard Ukraine, while U.S. warships have pulled out of the Black Sea. That withdrawal must be reversed. Ukraine grain shipments cannot be exported without U.S. and NATO protection. In 1987, President Reagan ordered the escort of oil tankers in the Persian Gulf to deter Iranian attacks. Similarly, President Biden will at some point be asked to provide escorts for grain shipments. Hopefully, he won't refuse, as he did in the case of the MiGs. The immediate crisis, however, is in the ground battle, where NATO aid has been limited to defensive systems, whatever that means. We did recently send 18 artillery pieces and 40,000 shells. However, that's a token amount, likely to be expended in a couple of days. Let's look at some historical examples. During World War II, in the attack on the tiny St. Malo, 14 square miles, our army fired 45,000 shells. On a single day in October 1944, 18,000 shells struck the mid-sized city of Aachen. The arithmetic of battle in any war is one of large, large numbers. Russia understands that. During the Vietnam War, Russia provided North Vietnam with 400 MiGs, 2,000 tanks, 7,000 artillery pieces, and 5,000 anti-aircraft guns. In contrast to our aid to Ukraine, Russia massively supplied North Vietnam with offensive weapons. In 1968, in Vietnam, in 2 weeks at our remote Khe Sanh base, in response to North Vietnamese shelling, we dropped 40,000 artillery shells and 1,000 tons of bombs on attacking North Vietnamese. In 1972, at the district town of An Lac, west of Saigon, the North Vietnamese launched repeated assaults with Russian-provided tanks and fired 47,000 artillery rounds. Since the war began, we and NATO have provided Ukraine about $4 billion in military aid, while the European nations have paid Russia $38 billion for hydrocarbons. Paying Putin $10 for every $1 in aid to Ukraine is a recipe for losing the war. Together, NATO and the U.S. annual military expenditures exceed $1 trillion. Aid to Ukraine is less than one-half of 1% of that amount. This, like using masks, is a plan for failure. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Front Lines of Freedom. We get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
Colonel, the Experimental Aircraft Museum in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, has a new aircraft exhibit showing off a Corsair that is honoring Korean War Medal of Honor recipient Thomas Hudner. The airplane has been in the museum collection for 40 years and was fully restored in 1994 with the markings of World War II ace Kenneth Walsh. Recent research into the aircraft logbooks, however, show the Corsair was a replacement for the Corsair that Hudner crash-landed in Korea in 1950 in an attempt to save fellow pilot Jesse Brown, the U.S. Navy's first black naval aviator. Hudner logged many hours of multiple carrier landings in the museum aircraft, which after its Navy service was owned by several individuals before it was finally donated to the museum in 1982. The Korean War incident that memorialized Hudner and Brown is actually a subject of a soon-to-be-released major motion picture. It's going to be called Devotion. Now, the gull-winged F-4 Corsair was one of the finest fighter-bomber aircraft produced during World War II. It was a formidable weapon from the closing months of World War II through the Korean War. During World War II, the Japanese regarded the Corsair as the most formidable American fighter with a kill ratio of 11 to 1. In Korea, the Corsair was outclassed as a fighter, although it did shoot down at least one Chinese MiG jet. It was mostly used as a ground-attacked fighter-bomber. Its speed and ruggedness and its huge bomb load capacity made it very effective in ground-attack role. The Corsair could carry up to 4,000 pounds and cruise at 215 miles an hour. But with the 2,450 horsepower engine, it could actually reach a max speed of 446 miles an hour. The Corsair's prototype first flew in May 1940, but the Navy, citing landing gear problems and poor visibility over the nose, decided the Corsair was not suitable for carrier duties. And even after modifications solved all those problems, the Navy was still slow to adopt it. But the Marines embraced it, making it one of their principal fighter bombers. The Navy gradually realized its value as an outstanding carrier-based aircraft, and it became rivaled only by the Grumman F-6 Hellcat. By late 1944, the U.S. was building 300 Corsairs a month. That's one every 82 minutes. And by the end of production in 1953, there was 12,571 Corsairs that were built. I'm really looking forward to see this exhibit this summer when I visit during the annual AirVenture Air Show in Oshkosh. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. That was interesting. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the book on China, War Without Rules, with General Robert Spalding. Then we'll talk with General Arnold Panero. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Start with 40, take a break, do another 30, then stand at ease. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
If you are suffering from anxiety, joint muscle aches, or trouble sleeping, try Day 3 Creation, a Christian family-owned provider of American-made, non-intoxicating, non-addictive CBD products created from natural, organic, laboratory-tested ingredients. Day 3 comes from a servant's heart as God calls us to care for each other with compassion and honesty. 10% of all profits go to Patriot Paws, providing disabled vets with service dogs. Visit day3creation.com. to learn more. God bless. Truth, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome to the show retired Air Force Brigadier General Robert Spalding. He's written a book that I think every single person in our nation should read. It's called War Without Rules, and it's about China's very clear and open plan to dominate the world. So, welcome to the show, General. I'm glad you could join us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Start by telling us about your time in the Air Force. When and why did you join? What'd you do? Where'd you serve?
Well, you know, my family farmed in California, and I really didn't have any intention of joining the military. And then I happened to watch this movie called Top Gun when I was finishing my last year of college. And so that really got me interested in pursuing aviation and the military. And so that's what got me joining the Air Force. I didn't intend to stay in for 26, 27 years. But, you know, ended up having an opportunity to go to China, and, you know, that led, one thing led to another. And, you know, 27 years later, you know, it was a pretty good career.
Well, it sounds like it. And I know exactly what you're talking about. I got in to serve, and I can't tell you how many of my friends said I never got around to getting out. It was too much a pleasure and the right thing to do and challenging and all that good stuff. So that makes sense. Okay, let's get to the book, because I think this is such a critical book. I knew a lot about our relationship with China. I was a war planner for a while, and I was asking a number of the questions you brought up in your book, but I never pulled it all together as you did. So we really are at war, aren't we, Rob?
Well, we are, and I guess probably the best way to describe it is the Chinese Communist Party is at war with us, and we don't know it. You know, it's almost like, you know, think about the Japanese deciding to go to war with the United States. There was an event. There was Pearl Harbor. You know, over 3,000 Americans lost their lives in that event. It crystallized for us that the Japanese were at war with us. you know, the Chinese Communist Party studied the way the United States perceives war and ensures that the things that they do will never cross the threshold that allows us to wake up to what's happening.
That's pretty smart on their part, isn't it?
Well, it is. And you know, this is the thing that I found so amazing and disturbing. You know, I spent my entire life thinking about and planning for and participating in war. And I thought I knew everything about warfare. And what I realized is, you know, there's a completely different way of looking at war. If you look at war more from the political lens and less from the military force lens, you know, all the things that we teach at the war colleges, professional military education, cannot prepare you for an opponent that seeks to manipulate your corporate leaders, your financial leaders, your academic leaders, and your politicians, you know, and the fact that they have access to those people and can create financial relationships with those people is something unprecedented in global relations.
On the other hand, it's certainly not the way it turned out particularly, but decades ago when China started this plan, they may not have known how they were going to implement it, but their intention was to do just that, wasn't it?
Well, I think the thing that that you and I both understand is doctrine. Doctrine, it comes from lessons learned on the battlefield. And so we have joint doctrine in the U.S., joint doctrine. We have the Air Force has its doctrine. Each of the services have their doctrine. And it's something that we use when we're thinking about, you know, planning a campaign or a war. You know, what are the things, what are the lessons learned, and what are the principles then that we need to apply in order to be successful? Well, these two PLA colonels, People's Liberation Army colonels in China, realized that, you know, they had to create a similar doctrine for war without, you know, violence. And that became, you know, what was translated by the open source center of the CIA called Unrestricted Warfare. Other translations are, you know, War Without Limits, or in the case of the way the title of the book, War Without Rules. And it really was taking the two tools, you know, an airplane's a tool for war, a howitzer's a tool, a tank's a tool, a gun's a tool, a bomb's a tool, taking the tools of the internet and globalization and then turning them into weapons of war that are just as effective as the weapons that I just announced was the goal of these two gentlemen. And the reason was, is because they saw, you know, what the United States military did during the first Gulf War, and they realized that was not a way that they could compete. They didn't have a military to match us. But if they used the internet and globalization, they could begin to put pressure on our political and corporate elites the same way that we do today with Russia and Ukraine. But, you know, more so, I think it was, you know, this realization in Kosovo where, you know, we use bombs dropped from a B-2 to take out the assets of the elites in Serbia. You know, the Chinese really used the internet and globalization to create relationships that allowed them to put pressure on the elites of our own country and the countries of other democracies.
Yeah, they figured it out. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing China with General Robert Spalding. Those two colonels who basically formalized the thoughts and the doctrine that's being followed now, they're pretty bright people. They thought long and hard, and they came up with something that clearly is working. So what do we do about it?
Well, you know, one of the things that we need to do is we need to get China out of our corporate, you know, out of our financial, all out of our political and academic systems. We need to get them out of our society because they use those connections in every way to undermine, you know, us from within. And so that's, you know, I've advocated for years now to decouple from China, to bring back manufacturing, to invest in our own people, in our own society. And I think that will force the Chinese, and to the extent that we have them do that with our allies and partners, it'll force the Chinese to rely on their own state-owned enterprises, their own failed policies that, you know, that mimic in many ways the Soviet Union. But because they have access to our money, to our innovation, our own technology, they're able to patch over or cover up the blemishes in their system. And, you know, we just need to force them, just like we did the Soviet Union, to rely on their own, you know, system to prop themselves up. And when we do that, they're going to start to decline.
Well, I've felt for years that America needs to be not 100% totally independent, but certainly fuel independent, food independent, medicine independent. I think we buy most of our medicine from China, don't we?
We buy most of our medicine from China. We, you know, microelectronics, you know, most of the goods that we get today come from China. And that's by design. We moved factories, in many cases, lock, stock, and barrel from the United States, where they were employing people. And we did it, and the corporations that did it purely for profit. You know, when you think about how we won World War II, how we won the Cold War, it was based on the industrial capacity of the United States. All of that is gone, and it's been taken over by China. So if you think about it, you know, just in terms of our ability to provide the goods that would allow us to defend ourselves, these are things that we've outsourced, you know, almost completely to China.
And that makes absolutely no sense. And to show our wisdom, we're now looking to Russia to help us with fuel. We need to know what's important and not be dependent on enemies or potential enemies for things that we need to be alive. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. General Spalding and I will be right back to continue talking about China. But I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, most days. To take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
From ending our nation's endless wars, to making sure veterans get the care they deserve, to addressing our country's out-of-control spending problem, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing our nation. You can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere. Visit cv4a.org to learn more, see how you can get involved, and join our movement. That's cv4a.org.
My fellow patriots, in these troubling times, it is more important than ever for us to take care of our fellow Americans. That's what Patriot Food stands for. U.S.-only grown foods. When you make an online purchase, you are supporting a U.S. farmer and our great veterans every time. Don't mistake Patriot Foods for survival food. This is an American farmer brand. Visit patriotfoods.com and click Shop Now today. That's patriotfoods.com and click Shop Now today. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with General Robert Spalding about his book, War Without Rules. And that war is with China, but it's not a shooting war, but it's probably a most effective kind of combat. Is that a fair way to put it, Robert? Of conducting war, what they're doing, it seems to be a really good plan and it's working, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you think about World War II, the French built the Maginot Line, and they believed, you know, intently that the Maginot Line would protect them from, you know, German attack. And in fact, what the Germans did is just go right around the Maginot Line. So in many ways, when you look at our military today, it's like this giant Maginot Line. It's a historical relic of the 20th century when, you know, military might, you know, translated into political power, geopolitical power. Today, technology and data and money really translate into geopolitical power. And so when we think about, you know, the military being the most, you know, we spend almost $800 billion a year, it should be the most powerful military in the world. But what do we protect? We can't protect the hearts and minds of our own citizens who are constantly bombarded with things like from apps like TikTok, where their own information about what they think and believe is taken and then turned through algorithms into messaging that targets them individually. And so it's not just that they're taking our elites and changing their allegiances away from, you know, our republic and more towards the interests of the Chinese Communist Party. It's that they're actually undermining the faith and confidence of our citizens in this idea of liberty and in our institutions. And so it's a very effective, cumulative, and comprehensive way of attacking the psyche, the social system, the political system of a free society, and they're doing it globally.
And we see this all kinds of places, and certainly they are in most of our colleges and universities, aren't they?
They absolutely are, and it's not just the Confucius Institutes. It's also the Chinese Student Associations, where the Chinese students themselves become the thought police for China. And so anytime, for instance, a university wants to host someone like the Dalai Lama or anybody that speaks about the problems of the Chinese Communist Party, they will run interference and try to get it turned off. And of course, they will be the first to, you know, denounce any Uyghurs or Tibetans that are protesting or want to, you know, protest on university campuses. So basically, the Chinese students that we have in our universities are enlisted by the Chinese Communist Party to basically help them control the narrative about China and about those things that China cares about on our own campuses.
And this is going on in lots of different ways, and it's successful. I did some volunteer work for some handling of clothing for people who need it. And most of it was new clothing, and almost all of it was made in China. We need to stop doing anything with China, in my not very humble opinion. We need a call to action to get people back. Am I right here, Rob?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you think about a company like Apple. Apple has something like $250, $260 billion in cash. They make enormous margins on the iPhone. And we're told that if that iPhone came to the United States, that instead of being $1,000, you know, and 400 or 500 of that being profit that goes directly into Apple's coffers, that, you know, it would be $10,000. And a lot of this mythology around the cost of manufacturing in China is just that, mythology. And a lot of it is promoted by these corporations that are able to make a lot of money in China because of subsidized power for the factories and other subsidized resources. And so, you know, it's really meant to not only take the financial capability of the United States in terms of investment. Apple signed up to invest $260 billion into China as a result of their having access to Chinese markets there. But it's also, you know, this idea of innovation. So innovation comes from the manufacturing process. So our industrial base, one of the reasons we were such an innovative country was because of our, you know, massive industrial base. When we got rid of that, the innovation that goes along with manufacturing goes away. And that's 70% of the innovation overall. So it's a huge problem technologically. It's a huge problem economically in terms of our working class. They have not had the type of steady employment and ability to raise their kids and value the principles of the United States because, quite frankly, that's all been stripped from them. So it's a very comprehensive, again, successful way of destroying the social fabric of a society.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Spalding about China. Rob, one, give us a call to action. And then two, talk to us about your book. I hope every single person listening will buy the book, buy two copies and give a copy to someone else. We Americans need to wake up. sum up the key points. What do we have to be doing? What's our call to action?
Well, we need to stop buying Chinese products and we need to stop investing in China. You know, all of our investment vehicles, whether you have a pension fund, is sending money to China. That money should be sent to your communities to build businesses and build up the manufacturing capability of the United States. Cutting off the Chinese economy from the U.S. economy is probably the most important thing that we can do. And, you know, it really also, it happens at the ballot box, who you vote for. What is their position with regard to how we should, you know, allow China to continue to sap our, you know, our capital, our innovation, our technology, and our talent? And we need to cut off the ability for China to access our universities, to access our corporate sector, to access our financial sector. So these are all things that, you know, we need to do in order to protect ourselves. And then if we can do that, the money and the innovation, the technology and the talent can be reinvested into this country in manufacturing and infrastructure and science and technology and STEM education. And that will get us back on the path to prosperity. And ultimately, that's what's going to defeat the Chinese Communist Party. It's American citizens, you know, savoring in the fact that they're in a free society and they're able to provide for their own destiny because we have cut off this very parasitic, relationship.
Yes, sir. Well, that's the call to action. How can people get a copy of your book?
Well, it's available and wherever books are sold. There's an audible version. There's a, you know, hard copy, and then there's a electronic version. So wherever you buy books, that's there.
The book is War Without Rules by General Robert Spalding. And let me strongly encourage everyone listening to get a copy of that book. Thank you, Rob, for joining us today. Thank you for your service to our nation on active duty, but thank you for this book. I hope this brings a turnaround in our nation.
Thank you so much.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with retired Marine General Arnold Pinero about some of our nation's challenges. Then we'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. Troops, I'm not fond of pain, and I absolutely won't use addicting products. That's why I can recommend Day 3 Creation products if you're in pain. Use the code FREEDOM when you order at day3creation.com and save 20%. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for jumpy jacks. Do 50 good ones now. Then grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.